leaning against Joel, peering through the unbearable light toward Vera. She opens her mouth and draws in a deep breath, and then she exhales in a long sigh that rolls toward me like an icy wave crashing over my skin. Edwin's face is grey. Danny's eyes meet mine for a moment, and then he bends over and retches repeatedly. For a long moment, there is no other sound, no other movement. Laura's eyes are fixed on the gravel at her feet. "Let's get you down to the station, Mrs. Blackwood," Martin says then, his voice remarkably gentle, and we watch as the blue light flashes along the lane toward us. The gravel sprays in impressive arcs. Martin eases Vera gently into the rear seat, protecting her head from the doorframe with his large hand. The sun scorches my retinas and hollows out my skull. In the silence that blooms behind the police car's fading growl, a gull takes off from the garage roof with a great flapping of wings, and I watch it fly away until it's a speck in the sky, somewhere out over the sea. Then the front door opens, and my attention is tugged back to the land, to the broad-shouldered man and the tall young woman with the pink streak in her hair. The two strangers who stand on the doorstep of Summerbourne as if they belong there. Laura gazes at Alex and Chiara, and her hand rises to the locket around her neck. She clears her throat before glancing at the rest of us.
"Shall we go inside?"
she says.
"I think I'd better tell you everything."
26. Laura, July 1992. Ruth told everyone her baby was due toward the end of August. Privately, I knew the end of July was more likely. Dominic continued to come home on a Friday night and return to London on a Monday morning, and Vera visited for lunch on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. The rest of the week, we suited ourselves. On the Monday following Alex's unwelcome visit, the 20th of July, Ruth asked me to take him a note. "Make sure you put it straight into his hands," she told me. "If he's not in, don't post it through the letterbox. Bring it back." I glimpsed an anonymous list of demands. Paternity claim to be renounced, visits to be of appropriate duration and frequency for a family friend, no hints ever to be made to the father. "Do you really think this is a good idea?" I asked. She scowled. "He has no choice. It's my decision." "I just can't see him accepting his own child calling him Uncle Alex."
"Just give him the note, Laura. Whose side are you on?"
The water from the taps had developed a rusty brown colouring that day, so Ruth and Edwin waited in for the plumber while I plodded into the village in the early afternoon heat. I passed Helen Luckhurst outside the shop.
"How's Ruth? Any better?" she asked.
"She's great," I said. "Thanks, I'd better get on."
At Alex's cottage, the yellow sports car was nowhere to be seen. A stranger opened the front door, a woman in her 50s, looking me up and down with hostile eyes.
"Are you Ruth?" she asked.
"No," I bit back an incredulous laugh.
"Where's Alex?"
He appeared from around the side of the cottage, tugging a pair of gardening gloves off his hands.
"Laura, hi."
The woman folded her arms and continued to stare at me. I pressed my bag more tightly to my side.
"Can we talk? In private?" I asked him.
The flash of hope in his eyes made my stomach turn over. I followed him into the low-ceilinged cottage, through a small living room, to an even tinier room at the back. It smelled of new paint, and there was a cot in the corner, made up with fresh white bedding and a brightly coloured crib bumper. A baby bath and changing mat sat on the floor next to it, alongside packets of nappies and a soft toy rabbit. My mouth fell open, but no words came out. He closed the door.
"Do you like it?" he asked,
I swallowed. I wasn't expecting...
He wound a dial on the cot mobile, and a tinkly lullaby tune filled the room as the teddy bears on the hanging frame rotated.
I've done the same at home in Leeds, he said over the music. A bigger room there, of course, and I've bought a family-friendly car. But we'll play it by ear. If the child is safe at Summerbourne, then he or she can just come here for short visits at first.
He finally read the shock in my expression.
What's wrong? He said. The woman out there, she's a private midwife. She's going to help me in the early days. I'm not leaving anything to chance.
I handed him Ruth's note and stood by the window as he read it. A scruffy blackbird darted out from the undergrowth and snatched a worm from the freshly turned earth of a flower bed. A noise of contempt accompanied the scrunching of paper behind me.
She still thinks I might back down, he said.
I turned slowly. She hopes you will.
How can I?
I shook my head, but his hand shot out suddenly and grabbed me by the wrist, pulling me closer until his face was only inches from mine.
You've got to help me, Laura. She's not rational. I'm afraid she's going to hurt the baby.
I tried to jerk my arm from his grasp, recognizing in his expression the same wild desperation I had seen in Ruth's when she read his letters.
You've got to tell me, he said, the moment it's born. Do you understand? I need to know as soon as it happens.
Let go of me! He blinked and released his grip.
I'm sorry, but promise you'll tell me.
I backed toward the door, rubbing my wrist. He was just as deluded, just as irrational as she was. All this time I had imagined a compromise could be reached, that I could help them reach it even, and they would both be grateful. How naive I was, how immature and useless. I'm going home, Alex. His forehead creased.
Okay.
I mean I'm resigning, going back to London. Dominic's on annual leave next week, and then there'll be his paternity leave. They don't need me anymore. His eyes widened.
You can't. You can't leave. I need your help.
For a split second, I was tempted to close the gap between us, to take hold of his hand and promise to help him, to tell him we could do this together. We could look after this baby together, me and him. I shook my head. I've got to go. The midwife frowned over a crossword in the living room, ignoring me as I hurried past her to the front door. Alex put his hand on my arm as I stepped outside, and I swung back to him, assuming he was going to say goodbye.
Do you think I should ring Dominic?
He asked. I gave an involuntary laugh and turned my back on him, stumbling on the uneven path. I crossed to the shady side of the lane and began the long trudge back to Summerbourne. My eyes stung, my throat hurt, and my whole body ached. I would probably never see Alex again, and he didn't even care. The taps were running clear when I eventually got back, despite the plumber not finding a cause for the earlier discoloration. Edwin and Joel were playing an elaborate game involving the sandpit and the paddling pool, and Ruth beckoned me to join her in the shade on the patio. The apricot tree by the kitchen window was heavy with fruit, and a freshly picked bowlful lay on the table between us.
Well, what did he say?
I sank my teeth into a sun-warmed apricot and wiped juice from my chin before replying. Nothing really.
Is he going to do it? Agree to my terms?
I don't know.
She huffed. I thought you'd have some kind of answer for me, Laura.
I gave him the letter. I tried. If you want to know what he thinks, you'll have to talk to him yourself. I'm sorry.
I threw my fruit stone into a flower bed and stalked off to the annex. Inside the top drawer of my desk, tucked between sheets of notes for studying, was the resignation letter I had so carefully written and not yet dated. I decided I would wait until Dominic arrived home on Friday evening at the start of his annual leave. Tell them both then, and leave on Saturday morning. It would be less painful than a protracted goodbye, as far as Edwin was concerned. Deep down, I knew that I had to get home. No matter how displeased Mum and Beaky were going to be, I needed that sanctuary away from the people here. When Ruth knocked lightly on my door that evening, I hurried to open it, not wanting her to step inside and notice that I'd already packed the books from my shelves. "Would you be a darling and put Edwin to bed for me?" she asked. "I'm getting lots of Braxton Hicks. I'd like to lie down and see if they'll ease off." "Sure, I'll be up in 5 minutes." Edwin wore his new pale blue pajamas, given to him by Vera the previous week. He had managed to do all the buttons up without help and was pleased with himself. He knelt on his duvet and wrapped his arms around my neck, burying his face into my hair. And we had a long cuddle without saying anything. I sat by his side after his story, stroking his hand until he fell asleep. In all the time I'd lived at Summerbourne, I'd never locked my annex door, and this was the first night anyone ever came in and woke me up. "Laura?" I dragged my mind up out of a deep sleep. Ruth was shaking my shoulder, her face looming round and pale above me. "Laura, I need you. It started." My whole body trembled. I dragged my dressing gown on and stuffed my feet into my slippers, frightened thoughts rattling through my mind. I was astonished when I realized that Ruth's mood was one of suppressed excitement. She turned lamps on in the day nursery and laid towels on one of the sofas, pausing to close her eyes and breathe through a contraction every couple of minutes. My feelings about Ruth had ranged from admiration to frustration over the preceding 11 months. But in the early hours of that morning, I was awestruck by her composure. Her self-assurance calmed the buzzing of my nerves, and after a while I fell into a rhythm to match hers. Between her contractions, we chatted about inconsequential matters, sometimes exchanging stories of funny things Edwin had said, making each other smile. As each new muscle spasm began to build, she turned her focus inward, and I breathed along with her, my own abdomen tightening in sympathy. The night sky was shading into pink when she announced she needed to push. The atmosphere in the room slid into something urgent I wanted to escape from. "Let me call someone," I said. "I can't do this." She buried her nails into my arm. "You have to," she hissed. "It's coming." It was the last coherent thing she said for a while. She knelt on the sofa, holding on to the back of it, and I paced up and down behind her, fighting the urge to open the door and run. As her vocalizations grew louder, I picked up a towel. There was nobody else. I had to do this. The head came first, and after another push, the rest of the baby followed. Pink and long and lean, all slimy and slippery. I caught it with my towel and fumbled, laying the bundle on the floor while Ruth sagged down onto the sofa. She held her arms out wordlessly, and I scooped the towel and its contents up and placed them in her arms. "It's a girl," she breathed. She wiped the little face, and a single tear slid down her cheek. "She's the most beautiful baby I've ever seen." The baby's eyes were open, her chest rising and falling gently. I could see nothing of Alex in her round face, her rosy skin. Her tiny lips parted repeatedly, but no sound emerged. "Are you hungry, baby?" Ruth said. She rewrapped the little body in the towel and settled back in the corner of the sofa to latch her onto her breast. "Pass me the bag," she said, barely glancing at me. "The placenta will come in a minute. I'll need to cut the cord." I squeezed my hands together. "Do you want me to ring Dominic?" The briefest flicker of a frown was replaced with a smile. "Yes, go." In the dim light of the hall, I pushed the heels of my hands into my eye sockets. "Don't cry," I told myself. "Get a grip." I ran my fingertip down the worn tabs of the address book on the hall table, pausing on the K. I gritted my teeth. The number for Dominic's London flat was scrawled on the inside front cover. and I dialed that.
I'm on my way, Dominic said. 3 hours, tops.
By the time I carried tea and toast back through to Ruth, the baby was asleep, the umbilical cord tied off, and Ruth was stroking the tiny face with one finger. I'm going to call her Seraphine, she said. She looks like an angel. Edwin came downstairs shortly afterward and padded through from the kitchen, rubbing his eyes and looking at the scene with surprise. Come and meet your summer-born sister, darling, Ruth said, smiling at him. He stuck his thumb in his mouth and scowled. I led him back to the kitchen and made him some porridge, but he refused to eat it. Dominic's car roared onto the drive just after 9 o'clock. It promised to be another warm day, and Ruth had settled herself on the patio with the baby in her arms. Dominic's smile was broad as he bent to kiss her, and then to kiss the baby's head.
Was it awful, darling?
He asked. Of course, she said. They smiled at each other. I couldn't have done it without Laura, she added, and Dominic gave me a grateful grimace before intercepting Edwin as he wandered past on the lawn. He swung the little boy up in the air and tried to make him laugh, but Edwin burst into tears.
What on earth's the matter? Dominic asked.
I wanted a brother, Edwin wailed.
Dominic suppressed a smile. She'll be just as good as a brother. Even better, she'll be your best friend.
Edwin sniffed.
Joel's my best friend.
Well, okay, but your sister, Seraphine, says you can have chocolate biscuits for breakfast to celebrate her arrival. What do you think of that?
The corners of Edwin's mouth crept upward.
Okay.
Dominic rocked the baby and sang to her while Ruth went upstairs to have a shower. I retreated to the annex to wash and dress and to finish my packing. I lifted my resignation letter from its drawer and laid it on the desk. It took mere seconds to date and sign. I was still contemplating the finished result when I heard Dominic call me from the day nursery. I flipped the letter face down.
Oh, Laura, you wouldn't mind just taking a picture of us all, would you? While the baby's settled, before she needs feeding again?
I followed him out to the patio and waited for them to arrange themselves into a little happy family tableau. Dominic put a new film in the camera and wiped chocolate from around Edwin's mouth. A familiar squeak drifted across from the far corner of the lawn as Michael emerged from the trees, pushing his wheelbarrow toward the vegetable garden. Edwin shouted,
Mr. Harris, I've got a new baby!
Dominic and Ruth both turned and waved to Michael, and he called out congratulations.
Take a couple,
Dominic said as he handed me the camera, but I felt neither physically nor mentally able to concentrate on getting a good shot. I pressed the button once and handed it back.
I don't feel well, I'm sorry, I said.
Goodness, you should have said.
Dominic frowned at me.
Go back to bed. You must be shattered. Ruth, I'll go and ring your mother.
I was trailing after him into the house when he swung back in the doorway as if he'd just remembered something.
Oh, I'll let Alex know too. He rang me last night. He's at the cottage. Wanted me to let him know as soon as we had news.
The colour drained from Ruth's face. The baby had just latched on to feed, but jerked her head back and began to cry, as if she'd detected the sudden change in Ruth's mood. No, Ruth said. Don't. Not Alex. Dominic blinked at her.
Oh. Okay.
He glanced at me.
He asked me to remind you to get in touch with him, Laura. Keep your promise, he said.
He smiled, and I realized he was enjoying the hint of romance this suggested. When it became clear I wasn't going to respond, he shrugged.
I'll go and ring Vera anyway.
I was poised to follow him in, but Ruth's glare froze my limbs. I wanted to protest my innocence, to claim that I had no idea what promise Alex was talking about. But it took all my effort just to stay upright. She scrambled to her feet with the crying baby pressed against her shoulder and advanced on me, her body quivering.
You traitor,
she hissed. She jabbed my collarbone with her free hand as the baby wailed.
You deceitful little snake. I trusted you, and you've been on his side all along, haven't you? Haven't you?
I shook my head, and as I stepped back, my foot caught on the leg of a chair and I stumbled.
I can't believe I trusted you, she said. You betrayed me.
She shoved me hard in my chest, and I fell backward onto the stone slabs. A sharp pain gripped my abdomen, and I curled over on the ground, trying to catch my breath.
Go, she said, tears streaming down her face. Pack your things and go. Leave us alone. I never want to see you again.
27. Seraphine. I can't tear my eyes from Laura's face as she finishes telling us about the birth of Ruth's baby. Seraphine. I'm Seraphine, aren't I? But Alex took Seraphine away. Laura starts to cough and flaps a hand. Her face below the bandage is blotchy. Her voice has weakened. Edwin earlier carried a dining chair into the sitting room so he could perch next to her armchair, and he leaps up now to fetch her a glass of water. Edwin has insisted we don't speculate further on Vera's arrest until we have more information from Martin. But I'm struggling to process Laura's story while images of Dad's accident and my mother's suicide jostle in my mind. I look across at Alex on the opposite sofa. If I'm Seraphine, then this man is my father. But he's oblivious to my gaze, his eyes fixed on Kiara next to him. Kiara opens her mouth as Edwin returns with the water for Laura. I'm expecting her to say, "So who am I?" But instead she says, "So, I'm Seraphine?" I make a choking sound, and everyone looks at me. "Yes," Alex says, turning back to Kiara. Laura puts her glass down, shaking her head. "No," she says. Kiara stares at her. Next to me, Danny's expression darkens. I'm aware of Joel flexing his fingers on my other side. Alex's eyes slide toward me for a fraction of a second before flicking back to Kiara.
"Are you okay?" Edwin asks Laura.
She nods.
"You'd better carry on then," Edwin says.
Laura clears her throat.
28. Laura, July 1992. I staggered back to the annex, groaning at the pain in my abdomen, making for the bathroom to splash water on my face. As the muscle spasm eased, a sudden gush of fluid onto the floor sent a shockwave of cold terror over me. My suitcase was packed. My employer had just sacked me, but I wasn't able to run away from this. At some deep level, I'd understood for months that this day was coming, that it was inevitable. There's only so long you can remain in denial about a new life growing inside you. In later years, I read all I could on denial of pregnancy, from dry scientific papers to sensational tabloid articles and all the parenting forums in between. It happens in around 1 in 400 pregnancies and sometimes persists right up until delivery. The underlying causes are poorly understood, but the only doctor I ever discussed it with told me that mine was a classic case, isolated from friends and family, surrounded by people wrapped up in their own problems, at a stage of life not compatible with rearing a child. The fact that I was taking the contraceptive pill and that I'm tall and gained weight all over without a distinct bump made its persistence all the more possible. I lost all track of time on those hard bathroom tiles, sometimes curled on my side, sometimes crouched on all fours, alternating between intense contractions of muscle and pauses for gasping in more oxygen. My mind surrendered to my body, and my body knew exactly what to do. A scream filled the room as I pushed the child out of me, and some period of time later, it occurred to me that the noise must have come from my own throat.
I opened my eyes. The tiny infant lay motionless in the corner under the sink, a blue tinge to its skin, the cord between us pulsing feebly. A faint noise in the background had barely registered in my consciousness, but suddenly a voice outside the door snapped me out of my stupor.
Laura, are you all right in there?
It was Dominic. I tried to sit up, but my hand slipped on the tiles. Pain shot through my elbow. The door handle creaked.
Bloody hell.
For a moment, he filled the doorway. Then he was on his knees, bending over the baby, clearing slime from its nose and mouth. He rubbed it with the hand towel.
Come on, come on.
A wet splutter came from the tiny body, followed by a wheezing sound. The blue sheen faded as it filled its lungs with air. Dominic cradled it against his chest and stared at me.
Is it mine?
I closed my eyes. I nodded. I was vaguely aware of him scuffling and murmuring, but was jolted awake again by something bumping my side. Dominic leaned against my arm, pressing the baby onto my t-shirt.
He's hungry. You need to feed him.
Despite my reluctance and the baby's feeble appearance, some shared primeval instinct helped him achieve a few minutes of sucking. Dominic retrieved Ruth's birth kit from the day nursery and cut the cord. All I could think about was my suitcase and my escape route. But when I finally looked at Dominic's face, I was surprised to see no anger there. His eyes glistened as he gazed at the infant.
My son,
he said. As soon as the baby relaxed into sleep, I pulled my t-shirt down and pushed him into Dominic's arms, sliding away across the floor to put a gap between us. I can't, I said. Dominic stroked the baby's head, and his voice was soft, entranced.
It's okay. He can stay here. He's Edwin and Seraphine's brother. He belongs here at Summerbourne.
I stared at him. But Ruth?
It's not up to Ruth. He's my son. He'll stay here.
I looked at the spindly limbs and wrinkled skin, the vulnerability of this tiny child. I shook my head. I can't. But Dominic's eyes were glowing now, and he smiled as he rewrapped the baby in a clean towel.
Ruth'll be upset, I know, but we'll work something out. We can tell people the truth if she wants to, but she probably won't want to. Better to tell everyone we had twins again. It's what everyone wanted, what we all hoped for.
My thoughts were jumbled. Upset? Ruth would be incandescent. I tried to picture her absorbing the news, examining the evidence, realizing just how extensive my betrayal of her had really been. I curled over on the tiled floor, clutching my abdomen. Deep at the back of my mind, I held on to my flimsy guarantee of protection, the one defense I had against Ruth. I knew her secret. She wouldn't lose sight of that fact. If I had no other way out, I could tell Dominic in a matter of seconds that Seraphine wasn't his. Dominic managed to tear his gaze from the baby to scrutinize me.
Take a shower, Laura. Get cleaned up. Ruth's upstairs having a nap while Seraphine sleeps. I'm going to nip to the station to catch Vera in a bit. She's coming for lunch. She has no idea yet. I'll take Edwin with me and give her the good news.
He smiled down at the baby again.
You know, I might just tell her we had two. And then when we get back, I'll explain it all to Ruth. She'll understand it's the best way. We'll sort it out.
I groaned as a spasm seized my abdomen.
After pains, he said. Have you got some painkillers? When you're ready, I'll get a taxi to take you straight back to your mum's. You can sleep on the way. By tonight, you'll be tucked up in your own bed, and this'll all be behind you.
He gazed down at the baby again.
Come on, my little summer-born boy.
But in the doorway, he hesitated,
looked back at me.
Do you want to give him a name?
I shivered. There was a name I had always thought I would use if I ever had a son. Danny, I said. Dominic released a breath.
Danny. Daniel. I like it.
He seemed to forget where he was for a moment, gazing down at the baby, cupping the tiny head in his hand.
Hey, little boy. This is your home, Danny. You're going to grow up here with your brother and sister, and you're going to be very happy, aren't you?
He kissed the baby's forehead, then turned to me, blinking.
Get dressed. I'll get some clothes on this one and put him in the bassinet in the day nursery for now. I'll talk to Ruth when we get back.
29. Seraphine. Danny crashes his knee against the coffee table as he barges out of the room, setting the empty mugs and glasses on the tray rattling. I scramble after him, calling his name. He doesn't slow until he's out of sight of the house, round by the back of the stable block. The shed door hangs open, and when he slams it with the heel of his hand, it bounces back at him. He slams it again, harder. Danny. I touch his shoulder, but he shakes me off.
Go away.
He presses his forehead onto the shed door, breathing heavily. Bees drone in the lavender hedge, and one bumbles out and zigzags toward me. I shoo it away. Danny!
She's a liar. She's trying to worm her way into our family. I don't want to hear any more.
I swallow. I'm sorry.
Why is she doing it? Why is she saying these things?
He turns to look at me, slumping against the wooden door. I shake my head, watching him.
Why did you go looking for her?
His voice is quieter now, but deeper, scratchy.
Why did you do this to us?
My vision blurs suddenly. I just want to know who I am. Can't you see? I'm not Seraphine. Alex took Seraphine. I still don't know who I am. Danny's chest rises and falls rapidly. Even though we're a couple of meters apart, I reach out a hand to him. Come back with me. He laughs without humour.
No way.
Please, Danny. I can't do this by myself.
Don't then. You started this, remember? You don't need me. I'm not even your...
Don't say that.
We're not related.
He makes the same laughing sound again, but there are tears on his cheeks now, too. His voice comes out as a harsh whisper.
I'm not your brother.
We stand facing each other for the longest moment, our breathing in unison, our eyes locked.
You are,
I say. He shakes his head, his mouth forming a grimace that looks almost apologetic.
Go,
he says.
Go on. Go back in. You need to hear the rest. Maybe Alex is your father. Maybe he isn't. Go back in and ask her.
Not without you. He chews the inside of his cheek.
I can't.
Please, Danny. He growls.
Don't.
Please. I can't do it without you. I need to hear the rest. I need to know. He closes his eyes and I wait. The scent of lavender is overwhelming. We are meters away from where Joel told those students we were the summer-born sprites. If Danny doesn't say something soon, I'm going to lie down on the warm grass right here and never get up.
Okay,
he says eventually.
Okay. But after this, I never want to see that woman again.
The clink of ice in glasses and the gentle hum of conversation adds to the surreal atmosphere as Danny and I sidle back into the room in which our relationships are being torn into shreds. Edwin gives us a flat smile, and Joel passes me a glass of iced water as I sink onto the sofa next to him. Joel's solid presence reminds me that my childhood was real. My childhood was mine. No matter what Laura tells me, no matter where I came from as a baby, my experiences as a girl called Seraphine, living in this yellow-bricked house, will still be valid, won't they? Alex is murmuring to Laura in a dazed tone, as if he can't quite remember why he's here.
I knew there was something wrong with you when I came back that summer. You looked different. I knew something wasn't right.
I put on 2 stone, Laura says. And there's something about the brief widening of her eyes that makes me think she's suppressing exasperation. With herself or with Alex, I can't tell.
I had to buy new clothes, baggy clothes, stretchy leggings. I told myself it was the long winter indoors, not swimming anymore, all the baking we were doing.
It's hard to explain. She frowns intensely, absorbed in her thoughts.
It's like, on one level, I knew a baby was in there, that it was going to have to come out at some point, but I...
She shakes her head.
You didn't know what to do about it, Alex suggests.
Not even that, really, Laura says. It didn't seem fair. I know that sounds childish, but it didn't seem fair that it had happened. She waves a hand, composes herself. I'd taken the pill. It just didn't seem fair.
Did nobody guess?
I can't believe someone didn't work it out. I didn't exactly mix with many people that year. Your midwife saw it, I think, the way she looked at me. She thought I might be Ruth at first when she opened the door to me. But in the village, I was just the summer-born nanny, a minor character, not very interesting, because I refused to give them the gossip they wanted about the glamorous Mays family.
Dad.
Kiara places a hand on Alex's arm.
Seraphine and Danny are back.
Alex blinks at us. Edwin is still perched next to Laura's armchair, and he takes her empty glass now and sets it on the coffee table.
Are you okay to carry on?
He asks her. Danny makes a low growl in his throat, but I think I'm the only one who hears it, and I squeeze his hand. Laura settles back in her chair.
Yes,
she says. I'm nearly done.
30. Laura, July 1992. As Dominic's footsteps receded, I hauled myself onto my hands and knees in preparation for a new contraction. I knew I still needed to deliver the placenta, but instead of a final stage of pushing, I felt like I was being dragged backward in time. The strength of the spasms built up again, and again I lost all sense of time and place until it was over. And I was shaking on the bathroom floor. A second tiny infant lay blue and motionless at my feet. I leaned against the bath for a while, trying to steady my breathing. Strength flowed back into my limbs as my body finally expelled the placentas. The baby twitched, and I slithered across the wet tiles and hooked my finger into its mouth, the way I had seen Dominic do with the first one. There were no towels left, so I peeled my t-shirt off and dried its body as well as I could. A little girl. I held her to my breast while my mind raced ahead. It barely seemed possible that Ruth would accept one illegitimate child of Dominic's. There was no chance she would agree to a pretense of triplets. Could I take her with me? I gazed down at her as she sucked. Back to Mum and Beaky, and a house where appearance was everything, and mistakes were not to be tolerated. It was impossible. They would never let me live there with a baby. We'd be homeless, without family or support. It was the shivering that finally made me struggle to my feet.
my limbs stiff with cold from the tiled floor. The baby had fallen asleep, and I shuffled to my bedroom and placed her on the middle of my bed, immediately collapsing next to her. I watched her chest rise and fall, her head turn from one side to the other. There was no way out of this. Dominic was going to return and find us, and there could be no happy ending. Eventually, I decided I couldn't bear to be found like this, naked and bloodstained. I hauled myself to the shower and crouched under the hot water, gripping the edge of the shower screen as I swiped at bloodstains on my legs, worried I was going to faint. It took me an age to get dressed afterward, my muscles complaining and refusing to cooperate. When my hairbrush clattered to the floor, the baby startled. I carried her through to the day nursery and found a note from Dominic in the bassinet. "Danny unsettled, so I'm taking him to station with me and Edwin. Everything will be okay. D." I was still shivering as I fumbled a nappy and clothes onto the baby and settled her in the basket. Standing over her, watching her tiny eyelashes flicker as she dozed, I felt a cold calmness filter down through my thoughts. I would stop the futile task of trying to work out how I could fix this, and instead concentrate on one plan: escape. If I could just stay upright, persuade my unsteady legs to carry me on through the day nursery, past the unwashed dishes on the kitchen table, all the way to where the phone sat on the hall table, I could call for help. In the hall, no sound came from Ruth and her baby above. Dominic's car had gone from the drive, and the house was still. I rested my fingertips on the phone, determined to stay on my feet, fearful that if I allowed myself to sit down, I might never get up again. Even if I could think of a lie that would persuade Mum and Beaky to come and get me, it would take too long. I needed to talk to the taxi company, ask them if they had a driver free who could take me all the way to London, immediately. I needed to leave before Dominic got back and found the second baby. But the taxi base was in King's Lynn. There was virtually no chance they could get here before Dominic did. I needed someone closer. Someone in the village. My finger stroked down the alphabet tabs of the address book and paused on the K. Alex would come. My suitcase would fit in his new family-friendly car. Alex owed me that much. After everything I'd done for him, letting him know he was going to be a father, liaising back and forth between him and Ruth, keeping his secret safe from Dominic, Alex would help me. He picked up after the second ring, his voice a boom in my ear.
"Hello?"
"Alex," I whispered.
"Laura? Is that you?"
I sank onto the chair next to the hall table, my knees trembling. "Alex, can you come? I need you." There was a pause, and then what sounded like a laugh.
"She's had it, hasn't she? I'm on my way."
"No," I said, "no." But he'd already hung up. The receiver fell into my lap. I looked up to find Ruth standing halfway down the stairs, holding her baby. She stared at me. "Ruth," I said. I managed to stand.
"You told him, didn't you?"
I didn't mean to, Ruth, I swear." "He's coming for her, isn't he?" Her face was white. I curled my arms around my abdomen. "I just want to go home." She came down the last few steps, her knuckles bloodless against the yellow baby blanket, her eyes darting around the hall. "I need to hide her," she said. "Where can I hide her? I can't let him take her." The baby gave a high-pitched, reedy wail. "Shh, shh," Ruth said, and then pushed the baby at me. "Take her, hide her. Keep her quiet, please, Laura." I didn't want to hold the child, but she quieted in my arms. She felt solid, heavy compared to the two I'd just given birth to, her sturdy legs drawing up toward her body and then stretching out strongly. She turned her face into my neck, her mouth open, making pecking movements. "She's hungry," I said, and the baby confirmed this with another creaky cry. Ruth strained on tiptoes to wrestle the bolt across the top of the front door. Her face was white. Her forehead glistened with sweat. She pressed her forehead against the window, peering down the drive toward the lane. "What am I going to do?" Her whole body quivered. "He'll be here any minute. He's going to take her. I can't let him take her." A wave of dizziness hit me and I leaned back in the chair. The baby gave a full-voiced wail. When Ruth spun around, her pupils were enormous. "Give her to me." She snatched the child from my arms, and then we both heard it. The growl of an approaching car engine. Ruth stood motionless in front of me, clutching the now silent baby to her chest, and she kept her gaze locked on mine as we held our breaths and listened. The engine roared, then cut out amidst a rattle of gravel. Two car doors slammed, one sharp crack after the other. I braced myself against the crash of the door knocker.
"Ruth, it's Alex. Can you let me in, please?"
His voice was loud but controlled. Ruth kept her back to the door, her eyes on me. My heart thudded. "Who's that with you?" she shouted.
"She's a maternity nurse. I just want to see my baby."
There was a thump on the front door. The letterbox rattled.
"She's not yours!" Ruth yelled.
There was an exchange of murmurs outside.
"She's a girl. Ruth, let me in. I just need to see that she's safe."
Ruth drew herself up and swung around to face the door, and with our eye contact broken, I was free to curl over in my seat, hunching my body against another spasm of abdominal pain.
"She's not yours!" she shouted again. "Go away!"
She swayed for a moment, and I rocked sideways in my seat, thinking to catch her, but she seemed to brace herself and didn't look at me again. Instead, she set off into the kitchen, the baby moaning against her chest. Moments later, I heard the distinctive scrape of patio chair against paving slab, and the baby's cry faded into the garden. The doorbell chimed, not once, but repeatedly, and then the knocker crashed down again.
"Let me in, now," Alex called, "or I'm calling the police."
I looked at the bolt across the top of the door. I had a wild idea of flinging the door open, clambering into Alex's car and insisting he take me home. But the pain in my abdomen made me curl over again. Even if I'd found the strength to stand and reach the bolt, I didn't have the strength to distract Alex from his goal. Gravel crunched outside, and I strained my ears. Were they moving away from the door? I remembered how easily Alex had jumped over the wall by the stable block, and I was unsurprised after a further minute to hear his voice in the back garden at the kitchen doors.
"Ruth? Hello? Where are you?"
He was inside then, brushing past me, tugging the bolt back and opening the front door. The midwife barged in with an infant car seat in one hand and a large brown medical bag in the other. I hauled myself to my feet, and Alex caught me by my upper arms, squeezing them, almost shaking them.
"It's a girl."
His mouth stretched into a pleading grin.
"I've got a daughter."
I wasn't prepared for the tears on his cheeks. I nodded. The midwife had moved around us into the kitchen and now loomed in the doorway.
"There's a baby blanket dropped on the lawn," she said.
Alex gripped me harder.
"Where's Ruth?"
My knees trembled and threatened to give way beneath me.
"Laura,"
he said, swaying his face in my field of vision, trying to make me look at him properly.
"Where is she? Tell me."
"Did she run out?" the midwife asked. Alex shook me, less gently this time.
"Has she gone to the cliffs?"
His voice was hoarse. My whole body trembled. I wanted him to look into my eyes and see everything that had happened to me and realize that I was the one who needed him. Ruth and her baby would be fine. I was the one who needed him the most.
"Did she take the baby to the cliffs, Laura?"
His voice was much louder suddenly, his grip on my arms fierce.
"Tell me, did she take the baby with her to the cliffs?"
I nodded. "Yes, He released me, and as my hand shot out to steady myself on the hall table, I knocked the telephone onto the tiled floor with a smash. Alex sprang away from me, hurrying into the kitchen, and I stumbled to the doorway to watch him jog out to the garden. The midwife began to follow him, but then she made a startled noise and swung back.
Stop!
She called out to him.
Wait! Come back!
Alex hesitated at the edge of the patio.
What is it?
A smile crept over the midwife's face, and she beckoned him back inside.
Listen, she said. I can hear her.
I held on to the doorframe with both hands, my body rigid, and all three of us listened to the thin wail that floated from the direction of the day nursery. The midwife shot me a dark look, but Alex's eyes were bright with wonder.
She's in there.
All his former urgency evaporated, and he pushed the door open and padded through the utility area to the day nursery, quite tentatively, as if wary of startling the source of the noise. I caught my shoulder on the corner of the wall as I followed, and the jolt of pain stiffened my limbs. As the three of us hesitated at our end of the day nursery, a spindly, white-clothed arm rose and waved feebly from the bassinet, and my heart battered in a frantic rhythm. No, I said, but Alex and the midwife were already halfway there, closing the distance between their hungry expressions and my tiny daughter. My throat constricted as they loomed over her. I had to explain. They had it wrong. It was all such a mess. I watched as Alex placed his fingertip in the baby's palm, and her fingers closed over it immediately. He turned shining eyes to me.
She's beautiful,
he said, and his mouth curved into a smile that I hadn't seen since our carefree racing on the beach months earlier.
Perfect,
he said.
What's her name?
My throat closed. The future hovered like a boat about to raise its sail, waiting for my next words. Suspended between elements, tugged by guilt and love and desperation. Should I tell him the truth? That his daughter was outside with Ruth, probably on the clifftop, waiting for her next feed, oblivious to the adult battles waging around her? Should I tell him that this beautiful, fragile child, holding onto his finger, was unexpected, unwanted, nameless, not his? I opened my mouth.
What?
Alex said.
Haven't they even named her yet?
The baby whimpered, and he turned back to her.
Hey, little one,
he cooed. I held my breath. He stroked the back of her hand with his thumb.
What shall we call you?
Kiara? Do you like that name?
You do, don't you?
When I closed my eyes, rectangles of light from the tall windows glowed inside my eyelids. It took all my effort to force my eyes open again, to make myself watch. The midwife undid the snaps and peeled back sticky tabs. She tutted and murmured to Alex, and they bent their heads closer over the basket.
What time was she born?
The midwife asked, not bothering to look at me.
When was she last fed? Where's Dominic?
Alex asked me.
She's cold, the midwife said. Does Dominic even know she's been born?
Alex asked.
We need to get her warmed up and fed,
the midwife said. Alex gently extracted his finger from the baby's grasp, and as the midwife began to poke the tiny limbs into different clothes, he turned to me with a frown of concern. I peered around him as he approached. The woman was flipping back the straps of the car seat and sliding her hands into the bassinet.
You look terrible, Laura. I'm so sorry you got caught up in all of this.
He stepped in between me and the car seat, blocking my view.
Laura, listen. I'm going to take her with me to make sure she's safe, okay? Tell Ruth, tell Dominic to ring me. We can discuss where we go from here.
The high-pitched whine of the telephone handset leaked into the room, drilling through my ears and filling my skull with its screech.
Are you listening? I can't leave her here. Do you understand?
The midwife swung the car seat sideways as she moved toward the door, hiding the baby's face from me. Alex gave my hand a brief squeeze, frowning.
This is not your fault, Laura, okay? Get them to ring me.
The noise in my head swelled and pulsed, loud, desperate, relentless. It took me an age to reach the window by the front door. They were gone. Alex and the midwife and my baby daughter were gone.
31. Seraphine. I am Seraphine. I am Seraphine. I am Ruth's daughter. I am the baby who went with my mother to the cliffs. My real father thought he'd taken me, rescued me, but he hadn't. I stayed here at Summerbourne with a man who wasn't my real father. I stayed here at Summerbourne and grew up with people whispering behind my back, neighbours scrutinising my looks, friends asking me why I was so different to my brothers, children teasing me that I came from somewhere else. I stayed here at Summerbourne, where I belonged. Laura looks at her lap while she talks. Edwin, perched next to her, is poised as if expecting her to topple out of her chair at any moment. The three of us on our sofa, Danny, me and Joel, alternate between gazing at Laura and staring at Alex and Kiara opposite. My relief at being Seraphine, the real, original Seraphine, rushes through my arteries, while a proper understanding of what this means for those I love lags behind, like a poison I am trying not to absorb. Alex is shaking his head, his breathing rapid, and by the time Laura finishes speaking, his face is contorted. He bends forward in his seat as if gripped by pain.
No, he says hoarsely. No.
Kiara sits straight-backed, her hands curled into fists, her eyes fixed on Laura. So you're my mother, she says eventually. Laura meets her gaze and nods. And Dominic was my father, Kiara says. It's not a question.
I'm not.
Alex staggers to his feet.
Why are you doing this?
He reaches his hands out toward Laura, pleading with her to retract her words, to offer some alternative explanation.
Dad,
Kiara says, and then there is an awful moment when Alex's gaze slides toward me, slipping over my hair and my face and quickly away again. I feel as though I've swallowed a large cold pebble. Whatever else Kiara was going to say dries in her throat. I'm too distracted by my own thoughts to realise Danny is about to speak, and his harsh voice sends a jolt through me.
So you left us?
He's speaking to Laura, but he doesn't look directly at her.
You let him take your daughter, and you left me here, and you went home and put it all behind you.
Laura draws herself up. I know I can't say anything to make it better, Danny. Telling you I'm sorry doesn't help. But I am sorry, and I've been sorry every single day since. Danny growls deep in his throat.
My father,
he says. Laura sways forward slightly. Your father loved you from the moment he saw you. I can feel the vibration in Danny's arm next to mine, and I turn my head and press my face against his shoulder, squeezing his hand. Alex tries to pull Kiara to her feet, but she shakes her head.
No, we need to talk about this. Here, no.
Joel eases himself up as Alex swings toward Laura, and he and Edwin stand on either side of her as Alex lunges forward. She grips the arms of her chair and doesn't flinch.
How could you?
Alex spits, looming over her.
Kiara is my daughter. I'm her father. How could you do this to us?
Slowly, Laura pushes herself up, stepping between Edwin and Joel so that she's face to face with Alex, her dark eyes flashing beneath her bandage. She lifts her chin to him.
We all did bad things, Alex. You, me, Ruth, Dominic. Just because we haven't been arrested like Vera doesn't mean we got away with it.
Alex's face slowly crumples. Laura's posture softens and she touches his arm lightly.
We need to put the children first now, she sighs. I know that's what we thought we were doing back then, or at least that's how we justified it. But we need to concentrate on that now.
And if they want nothing to do with you?
Alex asks, his tone surprisingly gentle. Laura's gaze drops.
I wouldn't blame them. I've never looked for anything different.
A silence falls and I realise Kiara is watching Danny. I squeeze his hand, but he's frowning at Laura, looking at her directly for the first time.
So what happened after that?
Danny asks.
After Alex left with Kiara, what happened when Dad got home?
Edwin steadies Laura's arm as she sinks back into her chair. Joel settles next to me.
You all right?
He asks quietly.
I'm not, but I nod anyway.
Alex hesitates, but Kiara holds her hand out to him, and in the end, he sits back down.
Martin thinks Gran killed them.
Danny says,
Mum.
He acknowledges the wrongness of the word with a tightening of his lips.
And Dad.
Edwin holds up a hand.
Danny, don't. We don't know anything yet. Martin may well be wrong about all of it. Oh, for God's sake, Edwin, face facts.
Danny's tone is harsh.
She was here, with Dad, the morning he died. She was with Mum on the cliffs. She admitted she pushed the stone.
No, Edwin says. He takes a moment to compose himself. He's always had a much closer bond to Vera than I ever did, and his loyalty to her now is almost more than I can bear. Danny makes a visible effort to calm himself. He stretches his fingers over his knees and frowns at them, and eventually he looks up at Laura.
What happened when Dad got home?
He says. The protest in his voice is gone, replaced with a coldness that makes it clear he resents having to ask her anything.
What happened when he got back from the station and found...
For a long, still moment, the rest of us try to straighten the facts in our minds. Did they find anything amiss? Dominic and Vera when they returned to Summerbourne from the station? Dad didn't know about Kiara, I say quietly. He took Edwin and Danny to the station, and he left me here. And I was still here when he got back, wasn't I? We all look at Laura, and she takes a deep breath.
32. Laura, July 1992. I sat at the kitchen table after Alex and the midwife and the baby had gone. I ate a bowl of cornflakes with milk, and then a second one, wiping tears from my cheeks between mouthfuls. No figure appeared from the back of the garden, but I had neither the physical nor mental strength to go out and look for Ruth and Seraphine. I guess I'd been sitting at that table for around 15 minutes, when Dominic's car pulled up on the drive. Vera appeared in the kitchen first, carrying Danny in the infant car seat, and Dominic and Edwin clattered in behind her. Dominic didn't make eye contact with me, but muttered something about Ruth and headed off upstairs. Vera cooed at Danny as she lifted him from the car seat. Where's your mummy, little baby boy? Are you hungry? We need to fatten you up, don't we?
the chair scrape the tiles as I stood. My baby son. When he whimpered, my hand reached toward him involuntarily. Vera frowned at me.
Laura, you look dreadful. Were you up all night? You should go back to bed.
Where's Mummy? Edwin asked, peering out at the garden. Dominic strode into the kitchen.
Where are they, Laura? Where's Ruth?
My knees gave way, and I dropped back onto my chair. I pointed through the open doors. She went out.
What?
Dominic said. He and Vera exchanged glances.
Why?
The baby boy whimpered again. I shook my head, watching the tiny mouth open and close.
How long ago?
Vera asked. Dominic said,
Did she take Seraphine with her? Laura?
When I didn't respond, he turned to Vera.
I'll go and find her.
Do you have bottles? Vera asked him.
Formula?
Dominic shook his head.
I'll come with you,
Vera said. I thought she was about to hand the baby to me, but Dominic intercepted, scooping him out of her arms and carrying him to the day nursery. A creaky cry trailed behind him as he returned, and he shut the door firmly.
Sit tight. We'll be back in a few minutes.
He rested his hand on my arm for a moment, his wide eyes searching mine, and then the two of them hurried off down the garden.
Danny's hungry,
Edwin said, watching the retreating figures.
Yes.
I hope Mummy comes back soon.
He helped himself to cornflakes, and I poured milk onto them for him. Dominic ran back across the lawn within a few minutes, with Seraphine in his arms. He went straight to the phone in the hall.
Ambulance, please. My wife's unwell. She's just given birth. She's very confused. I'm afraid she's going to hurt herself.
I held my breath, watching Edwin's face. He stirred his cornflakes, frowning.
On the cliffs,
Dominic said.
No, she won't listen. I need someone here right now.
He marched back into the kitchen and dragged me to my feet, the baby held firmly against his chest with his other hand. I had no choice but to stagger along behind him as he ploughed on into the day nursery. He lay Seraphine down at the opposite end of the bassinet to Danny, their feet alongside each other's. Both babies, the robust little girl and the fragile little boy, made moaning noises and turned their heads from side to side.
What happened?
Dominic hissed at me. He glanced at Edwin, who hovered in the middle of the room, and managed to gain some control over his voice.
Go back to the kitchen, Edwin, and finish your cereal. Now.
I swayed on my feet, and Dominic caught me by the elbow, supporting me. He marched me back to the kitchen, out to the patio, propelling me onward each time I stumbled. Edwin sat at the kitchen table and watched us pass, his eyes wide.
Did you tell her about Danny?
Dominic said.
She's not making any sense. You've got to come and get Vera away so I can talk to Ruth properly.
He tried to hurry, but I couldn't keep up with him, and my legs buckled under me at the edge of the lawn. He crouched in front of me, gripping my hands.
Please, Laura, we need to hurry. Vera's bound to be going on about the twins, and Ruth won't know. I need to talk to her alone.
I can't.
You have to. Something's wrong with her. With Ruth. I think she's hallucinating.
Bright greenery whirled through my field of vision, and I closed my eyes against a surge of nausea.
Please.
He half lifted me from the grass.
You've got to come. She keeps saying, I don't know what's wrong with her. She keeps saying someone's coming to take her baby.
I sank my nails into his arm and he flinched. He's already taken her, I croaked. He let me drop back onto the lawn and stared at me. And then his gaze flitted to the day nursery windows.
You're... What's wrong with you? No one's taken her. You're not making sense.
A siren sounded in the distance. He gestured at the house.
Both our babies are in there, Seraphine and Danny. I just need to tell her about Danny. Make her understand.
He gave me an agonized look.
Please, Laura, help me.
I nodded and struggled to my feet. But before we made it halfway across the lawn, I fell again. The spinning in my head was worse than ever. Dominic hesitated. Go, I said. I can't. I'm sorry. A siren sounded louder in the lane, and then another.
Where's Edwin?
Dominic said suddenly. I followed his gaze through the open back doors. Edwin's chair at the kitchen table stood empty. Something small and white on the patio caught my attention. A cereal bowl, just outside the kitchen doors, broken neatly into two halves which tilted away from each other, spreading milk and cornflakes onto the stone slabs.
Edwin!
Dominic called.
Edwin!
He turned a full circle, his eyes searching the windows, the hedge, the trees at the back of the garden.
Edwin!
I staggered to my feet. Is the back gate open? Dominic stared at me, wild-eyed. Another burst of siren noise reached us, accompanied by pounding at the front door and raised voices. A man in a green uniform appeared from the direction of the stable block as Dominic turned and ran toward the gate and the cliffs. The medic jogged over to me, and I pointed after Dominic. A little boy, I said. Edwin, he's 4.
We were called about a woman, miss.
Yes, but I think he's gone to the cliffs as well. A police officer appeared behind him, and then another.
Can you give us the keys to the front door, please, miss?
Laura, I said. Laura Silvera. I took a couple of steps, but was seized by a violent shaking. They're in the hall table. In the drawer. Someone caught me as I stumbled, and helped me as far as the patio, where I sank onto a chair. Harsh voices stuttered from a radio indoors. More sirens wailed in the lane. Doors slammed. Sharp questions shot back and forth. Men and women in uniform jogged out of the house and away across the lawn. None of them so much as glanced at me. I didn't realize my eyes were closed until a woman in green shook my shoulder and made me jump.
Is there any formula in the house, do you know? For the babies, they're mighty hungry.
I shook my head. Is Edwin okay? Have you found him? She looked at me blankly. Figures emerged from the trees at the back of the garden, and I sat up straighter. 2 police officers hurried straight into the house, and the woman in green jogged over to meet her colleagues in the middle of the lawn, where they held a murmured conversation. Louder voices rose inside the house. I closed my eyes again and concentrated on fragments of sentences.
Fire engine along the cliffs from the boatyard. Could be anywhere.
Is there any chance?
Too late.
Above all of this floated a high-pitched, hungry wail that made me grunt as my insides contracted. A young police officer came to sit with me, introducing himself as PC Martin Larch. He rested a large hand on my arm for a moment.
Are you feeling all right, Miss Silveira? You look terrible,
he said. Have you found him?
Edwin? Not yet, but we will. We're checking the house and the garden. He's probably hiding somewhere.
I struggled to sit forward. He went to the cliffs, I'm sure of it. He went to find his mum.
I need to ask you about Mrs. Mays, Miss Silveira. About Ruth. When did you last see her?
I stared at him. I held onto the arm of my chair more tightly. Why? What's happened? He cleared his throat.
I'm sorry,
he said.
I'm very sorry to have to tell you, but Mrs. Mays fell from the cliff top a short while ago.
I shook my head. Fell from the cliff top. Fell from the cliff top. What did you say? He nodded, and he scrunched his face so tight for a second that his eyes closed almost completely. Tears splashed onto my lap and onto the cream summerborn patio cushions. Tears that I'd been holding back for hours. Tears that I'd been holding back since the night with Dominic, since the boat ride with Alex, since my first glimpse of the Summerborn au pair advert, which offered a new beginning I knew I didn't deserve. The young police officer, with the battle between his professional feelings and his personal feelings raging on his face, held my hand while the tears fell. "Not Edwin?" I asked eventually.
"No, no," he said. "Vera, Mrs. Blackwood, saw it happen. Edwin wasn't with them. We'll find him. Did you see Mrs. Mays before she went to the cliffs? You were here with her this morning when she delivered the babies?"
I swallowed. "Yes."
"What frame of mind was she in? Did something happen to upset her?"
My field of vision swayed again, and his face seemed to part into two pale discs, and my eyes weren't sure which of them to focus on. "I don't know," I said. He let out a puff of air.
"You really don't look well. Can I get you a glass of water?"
"Please," I whispered. "Find Edwin. They lost Theo. They can't lose..." Martin Larch nodded.
"I know," he said. "Stay here."
He left me then, and I closed my eyes again, unable to separate individual words from the background murmur of voices and the crackle of radios in the house behind me, unable to think coherently at all. A while later, the woman in green tapped my shoulder. "Are you okay there?" I stared at her. "Edwin?" I asked. "Have they found him?" "I don't know. Not yet." Uniformed strangers continued to bustle out of the house periodically and trot away down the lawn, while other people spilled out onto the patio. Neighbours, acquaintances from the village, their bright eyes drinking in the scene. Several cast sideways looks at me, but none ventured near enough to speak to me. Voices rose inside the house, and then a figure came jogging out of